Good evening, this is Kilo 2, Kilo Echo Yankee, KQKEY. My name is Mel, Mike Echo Lima. I'm in Brooklyn, New York. Our regular moderator here on the TechNet, 6K2RIW right now, is busy, so while he's doing the work, I said I'll pick up the net. To sign into the net, just give me your call letters and your name, and we'll see if we can have an interesting discussion and maybe learn something and help some people out. So, without further ado, this is K2KEY. Go ahead, please.
K2RSO, the name is Frank. I have no comments or questions at this time.
Thank you, Frank. Anybody else would like to join us?
QEO with a question, Mel.
Okay, Rich. Question. Good. Anybody else?
KC2MDP, Steve, no question.
WHCDL from Mel, quickly.
Joining us? Richard with a question. Anybody else out there would like to join us? This is K2KEY in the Limark Tech Net.
K2RUA, no questions.
Mel, WHCDO.
Okay, WB2CDL. Do you have a question or a comment?
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure I went into the net mode, because it was not when you started. And just remember to take a pause because of the IRLP delay between repeaters. It's now in net mode because the beep tone changed. I wanted to make sure that occurred.
Okay, that's what they're doing, pausing about 2 seconds. Okay, Andy. Was there anyone else who'd like to join us? This is K2KEY with the TechNet.
This is KB2LQN, Walt from Brooklyn. Possible question later on.
KB2RUA, no question.
Okay, I've got Walt, KB2LQN. There's no questions, and then there was another station that came in, but you're a little bit on the noisy side, so please, if you can just maybe talk up a little bit, maybe I can catch your call letters. Go ahead, please.
KC2OJO, Howard, question.
Okay, KC2OJO also with a question. Very good, Howard. Anybody else? Started, so the first one on the list with a question. Rich, N2EO, long time we haven't spoken to you. HI. Go ahead, Rich, with your question.
Okay, Mel, K2KEY, the Limark TechNet, N2EO. Okay, Mel, I purchased a BNK frequency counter. One piece of equipment, it goes up to 3.5 gigahertz. It just came the other day. Haven't been feeling too well, so I haven't delved into the manual. But I had a couple of questions, maybe you'll have some more later, but I noticed on the low frequency input, it says maximum voltage, and this is DC voltage, 250 volts. On the scaled input, which goes from 80 megahertz up to 3.5 gigs, it says maximum voltage, 3 volts. So it's quite a sensitive input. I wonder what you do to protect the input on your counter or on a counter such as this with such a with a sensitive input. And what kind of probe you use? They didn't give me a probe. What they gave me was scaled input uses a type N connector. They gave me an N to BMC adapter and a cable with two BMCs, one on each end. Do you use a 10 to 1 probe, or what do you use on a sensitive channel like that to protect it now? K2KEY and 2EO.
Okay, Rich. 2EO, K2KEY. All right. In fact, I'll tell you a very good way to do it. It's been there, and I've had a lot of experience. In fact, I think I know the unit you have, that B&K. Is this the one, the small one, the sort of like a white cabinet over?
Yeah, it's got a white front, that's correct. If you want, you can, if you're near a computer, go to Allied Electronics and Google B&K frequency counters. You'll see it there.
Hey, I'm laughing, Rich, because somebody gave me one and it was burned out because they exceeded the input. A simple way of treating an instrument like that and also increasing its flexibility, Rich, you could hook it now to a scope. Now, many of the high-end, better scopes, Tektronix, even going back, say, 20 years, had a CNC connector on the side where it had a one volt, I believe, peak-to-peak output for a frequency counter. In fact, back in the early days, they used to, you know, sell the frequency counters that you call Dixie tubes. Or if I even want to precede that, there was the up and down, the counters that used neon lamps that just went from one up, you know, to zero, and a whole string of them, you know, parallel. That was really the original frequency counters. But getting more back to modern times, the ones that you Dixies and now the ones, of course, that use LCD displays. I always use the frequency counter, other than when I've had it, the one that sits in a shack that has an antenna on it or connects to the A4 frequency readout. Normally, I use it with an oscilloscope. In fact, even the one in the shack is usually connected to the data management unit, my home little DFU system. So with that, not only do I get the waveform simultaneously, but I also get the frequency read out of it, Rich, over.
Okay, so you're connecting it to the scope, you say?
Roger, if you look at any of the better scopes, like Tektronix made, Hewlett Packard, even the Hitachi scope, you know, the latest scope, like Hitachi Leader, they have a connector on, well, Tektronix, the newer packet, had it on the side, a little cutout sort of on this scope, and where you can actually connect a frequency counter so that you can get not only the waveform, but basically the frequency of what you're dealing with, Rich, and that way you're going through the input of the scope, and you'll never see the input of the frequency counter do any damage to it, over.
Okay, now, very good. I got to look at my scope. It's a Tektronix that goes up to 660 megahertz. Not too high, but I got to look and see if I have one of those jacks.
Okay, which Tektronix do you have?
You know, I'm upstairs. I recently purchased it. I don't have the model number handy. It's a dual trace, 60 megahertz Tektronix, modern scope, solid state, you know, the whole nine yards.
Okay. Is it the 400 series, 453, 460? Do you think something like that, over?
Yeah, I believe so, Mel.
Okay, yeah, because you said around 60 megs. Yeah, that one will have it. The one with the big handle on it that snaps in place, you know, for using it, you know, or for tilting it or for carrying it. Am I correct? Over.
That is correct.
Okay, has a port on the side, a little sort of recessed area on the side of the cabinet with a bunch of BNCs and it switches over.
On the side? No, I haven't noticed anything on the side. Maybe on the back.
Okay, those series of Tektronix usually had a little side panel on the right side where it had the number of connectors. And one of them is the port for the frequency counter. But yeah, it's a possibility your particular model, I'm trying to remember if any of the models, which one had it, the rear. Usually the rear, they didn't have it because the GoPro had usually feet in the back made to stand up so it could stand, you know, vertically when transporting it. But it's possible that the model that you have does have some connectors in the back. Like I say, I'm familiar with a number of those scopes. I can't think of one that had the connectors in the back offhand, but any of the Tektronix scopes, I'm sure, whatever ones I've run into, Rich, have had a BNC connector available for connecting a frequency counter. Go ahead.
Hey, here we go. Located on the west coast of Canada. It's a few years old, it's used, but it's a fairly modern scope. Let's see what Eric has, Eric.
Somebody's calling, I can't hear you. 465, 462 has that little sensor that you're talking about. But it doesn't say frequency counter. What it'll say is vertical output or channel one output. They give you an output from a single channel, usually from channel one. It'll either say vertical or a channel one output. You can hook your frequency counter directly to that. And most of the scopes, the connectors are on the back. They're recessed in the back. You know, if it's a modern scope like a 2665 or a 2826, something like that, you'll find it in the back. It'll say vertical out, and that's what you can use.
Okay, Alex, thank you very, very much. Let me turn it back to Ned. I guess I got my question answered. That'll give me sort of a buffered input. Mel, and maybe Eric can answer. Mel, you said somebody gave you one of those with a blown input. I take it the input, if it gets blown, is quite expensive to repair. K2KEY N2EO. And why is it only good for 3 volts?
Okay. Yeah, Eric is right. It doesn't say frequency count. I may misled you a little bit, first of all, Rich, as far as saying frequency. It doesn't say it's frequency count, except they show you an example in the manual. If you got the manual, how you can hook the user frequency counter with it. I may be, you know, misled you a little bit by saying it says frequency counter on it. No, it says output, the verb B out, the V dash peak to peak output, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. What happens to it? They have a little network in there using a FET, and I guess they felt that because of the high gain input that that's its limitations, and because they usually suggest, you know, that you have a probe. You're going to use some kind of probe, like a 10-to-1 probe with this, I would assume, Rich. As far as repairing, anything, you know, is repairable. It depends on, you know, how much damage there is. If there's, you know, if it's reasonable, you can get the parts, and, you know, it's within reason. It pays to fix some of these instruments, Rich, so you can get sometimes some very good instruments, very fine piece of equipment that, you know, they just literally going for almost scrap weight. I'm sure that scope that you have, original cost, was many dollars, many kilodollars, and now you can pick them up for a very reasonable price. Go ahead.
Yeah, I paid a little under $400 for that scope. And it's pretty sweet, dual trace. It's a very nice scope. It's a little limited. It only goes to 60 megahertz. It's not 100 or 100 whatever megahertz scope, but for my needs, I think it'll serve quite well. And, all right, thank you very much. So I'll go to a V-channel input, or V-channel, vertical channel output. Look for that type of connection on the back of the scope, and that's where I'll plug the counter in. All right, thank you very much, Mel. See if anybody else has any questions there. K2KEY and 2EO.
Hey, Richard, 2EO, K2KEY. Yeah, I just said, you know, that's a 60 meg scope. Yeah, I have one that's also aging now. I have a couple of Butektronic scopes. And in fact, the one that sits on the bench, which is my handy-dandy scope that I use, 99% 100 meg, low 100 meg Tektronic scopes. I also have a DSO, digital storage Tektronic scope. Most of the time, the two of them are more than sufficient for my work. Not doing sophisticated work anymore that maybe Eric is involved with at the station. But, you know, for my experimenting, fooling around, repairing things and all, you'll find more than adequate, just a basic test bench to fix. I know what you're mostly involved with also there. At my original working CPH, of course, we had a lot of very sophisticated equipment because we had a regular lab system, you know, so kept it up to date with the new Tektron. We had the one that Eric just mentioned, the 2200 Tektronic. Yeah, great scope and all, but I'm very happy with what I'm using. Eric, you want to make any further comments on this jazz? Go ahead.
WHSCDO?
Yeah, okay. Andy, you're taking a second. I don't know about B&K instruments, but like Hewlett Packard and the Tektronic counters, they actually used on the input, especially the high-frequency input. The reason why the high-frequency inputs have such a low DC voltage is on the low-frequency input, they use pretty wide blocking steps, you know, 0.01, something like that. When you start to get something that goes up to a gig or higher, the passes stay small. So, you know, they only want you to put 3 volts in there. You put more than that in there, you wind up arcing over and melting the passes. Andy?
Yeah, Alec, just turn your cell phone on. I want to speak to you on the phone. Just want to mention that. WHCDO.
Guys,
I was
in a bad spot before
with
the phone problem.
I was listening
to my message. Go ahead,
Donald. Okay, I'm going to call you. Thank you, guys, WHCDO. I'm clear.
Hey, Andy. Talk to you later. Yes, you're right. Because of the range, the large range of that frequency counter for a fairly compact, reasonable instrument, does have some restrictions, you know, on what you can do with this rich, but if you hook it to the scope, you will never have any problems with it. I've got the frequency counter, I could say, hanging on that scope. I have a fluke, have to have a fluke frequency counter also that I have on, that I use on that Tektronic scope, and I have that B&K one that's sitting on the shelf there. I use it, the fact that you move the B&K now, the B&K now is upstairs in Radio Shack. I have a leader for that. I had a leader, a digital frequency counter that a friend of mine borrowed. So, you know, it was a little different layout that guy because it had also a, that you had a time domain on it, buttons that you could set, push for time domain. And so he had to use it. So I substituted in the B&K in for that fluke and for the one I was using for the leader, and I put the B&K in place of it, so I have this, what it actually is, digital readout on your favorite receiver there, Rich, the column 7584, over.
Okay, Mel, I was waiting for the beep, no beep. Okay, very good. All right, well, that answers my question, but, you know, I want to baby that thing. It's brand new. Like I say, I really didn't get into it. It came the other day, and I haven't been feeling well the last few days, so I opened the box and just took a quick look. I really haven't gotten into the manual yet. There's a function on there, I'm sure I'll understand it once I read the manual, but on the front it says RPM, is it revolution per minute? I mean, I don't know what that is. I mean, I see frequency, I see period, which of course is 1 over frequency, good for low frequency, high accuracy readings. Any idea what the RPM is, Bill?
RPM. Got me. Okay. Maybe Eric's still on frequency. Did you ever see a designation on that frequency count? It says RPM, Eric, over.
Sorry, Mel, I wasn't listening. Repeat the question.
He says on his frequency count he's got a terminal marked RPM. Is that the Romeo Papa Mary, over?
Yeah, it's not a terminal, it's a function. It's along with frequency and period. It says RPM. I can't believe that's revolution per minute.
Believe it or not, it might be RPM. They have a sensor attachment so that you can measure motion.
Okay, what do they use, like a Hall effect or something?
Yeah, you gotta remember the B&K, if you're talking B&K, they made a lot of products for various different industries, including automotive.
Okay, fine, Eric. Very good. All right, thank you.
Now, Rich, it could be because the number of the, B&K instruments that they, like Eric just said, that they have, for engine testing, where maybe you want to measure trail and RPM and all those type of things. You know, those were very popular instruments years ago. In fact, I think I have one that sort of measures, it's a tachometer. It's a digital readout for engine dwell and tachometer. So a tachometer basically would read the RPM of the engine. Maybe that's what it's for. They may have had an idea, like Eric said. In fact, they also have a temperature probe that you can also hook to these type of units, over.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. I don't know if this is a temperature function or not, but that could be useful for checking some of these output tubes that are very expensive.
Well, they had a lot of attachments, B&K. I don't know if it's particularly this one, but I've seen B&K had a number of different instruments that does this, double, triple duty. That, the instrument, it was like doing something, you say, gee, that's right, out of left field. I'm trying to remember which one. They had a couple of, they had a curve tracer. That I used to use. I still have it someplace. And that doubled as a low voltage power supply because the calibrating voltage in it to test the transistor was also, you could take it off and use it for if you needed some kind of source of very low current low current and variable voltage power supply. So, like I say, it's no doubt there may be a lot of different attachments that B&K, make little probes and boxes to hook onto this thing. I believe it was even Leader had like an attachment that you could hook to your frequency counter that measured capacitance and inductance, Rich, over.
Hey, Mel, well, that's interesting. Yeah, if you want to see it, go to, if you're near a computer, I bought this brand new. Go to Allied Electronics. I believe it's AlliedElectronics.com, or you can just Google Allied Electronics. And then look for B&K frequency counters under their search. You'll see they've got two. This is 3.5 gigahertz counter. You'll see it there, Mel.
Yeah, I think I know it. This is the one that has the connector in the back for a 9-volt external power supply, over.
I believe so.
Okay, yeah, they give you an adapter to use it on, I believe also it's, you can put batteries in this thing, am I correct, over?
No, you can't use, it's particularly, 110 volts AC, it's got nine, 7 segment LEDs, and it goes to 3.5 gigs of 1 part per million accuracy.
Hey, it's another version of the one I have, it's a little white cabinet, sort of curved edges and all, and this one has a plug in the back for, when you plug in the adapter for AC operation, if you have batteries, just, of course, this connects the battery supply, but this one, you can put in six pen light AA batteries. For portable use, so I guess they had a number of versions of it, all based on the same, outlay. All right, very good. I'm sure you'll have a lot of use out of it, Rich. Nice little instrument. And, let me know how you, in the future, how you make out with the instrument. You know, I meant to ask you a lot of times. I know this is off the path, way off tangent. How's your, my cat is rubbing against me. What do you, my cat would like this, MC would like this. How's Jingle, over?
Oh, he's doing good. He's downstairs right now. He's sitting under the cocktail table. You know, they like a closed-in spot. In fact, a little while, I'm going to go down and make sure he's got food.
Okay, yeah, mine just finished eating. She's sitting on the chair here, watching me. She follows me around the house. usually sits, loves to sit in the radio room, so maybe she's, that's most likely why I'm not around her. I'm sure she does some BWHI. Okay, let's go on with this. Enough of this. Everybody most likely says you've got to lose the grip on my chair. Next one is signed in that has a question. KC2OJO. Howie, are you still with us? This is KC2HY in the text app.
And to Geotech. Yes, I'm still with you. Please excuse any noise. I think that my antenna and 5 watts may be okay, but I think when it rains and it's surrounded by trees, it may not be quite as good. I am looking to buy a new HF through 6-meter transceiver, and I have looked at the medium price, upper part of the medium price range. And the HF receivers that I've looked at that look pretty good to me are the Tentec Omni 7, the Flex Radio 5000, and the Electcraft K3. They all seem to have very good receivers. But one thing that makes them different, and I don't know how useful it really is that the Flex Radio 5000 has a band scope that's continuous. The Tentec, you can push a button and you can see on the display the band you're looking at, a scope of that. And the Electcraft K3 is a very, very good receiver, but it doesn't have that feature at all. And I was wondering how important that generally is. The modes I'd most likely like to work are some digital and single sideband. Over to you, Mel. K2KEY, KC2OJO.
Okay, very good, Howie. KC2OJO, this is K2KEY. We just had another Howie join us in CTOC. Well, you know, that's a hard question. Because there's so many radios, and they're all good radios on the market today. The science is basically excellent today, and almost all of them, the transmitters, all the 100-watt category radios today, seem to transmit and sound excellent. The only thing that they may differ somewhat in, of course, is the receiver, and the old cliche, you get what you pay for. Now, as far as band scope. Yes, it's a helpful gadget. I have that system used to be called a pan adapter or spectrum display. And it's handy because what I usually do with it is, you know, I have, they're having to keep tuning back and forth across the band. I am a, you know, a somewhat of a DW operator to a great extent. So sometimes the band is quite, kind of quiet, and so that I can also free my hand for doing something else in the shack. What I'll do is just leave the receiver on and just glance at the scope every so often and see if I see something pop up, you know, a pip pop up there, and I'll go take a moon, you know, turn the receiver to that pip and take a listen. And that way I've, you know, pick out a station that maybe I want to talk to. Sometimes it was very handy. Years ago I had one. I had built a homebrew version for 6 meters and was able to spot band openings on 6 meters. So it is, no doubt, a great innovation for, you know, general use. And the don't, I know that the, yes, the K3, the Elecraft is an excellent piece of equipment, terrific write-up, but of course, I guess for that price and all, they have to draw a line somewhere as to what they could jam into that little box. So they did pass up on a band scope. There are people that say, you know, they're not really interested in it. They like to sit there and tune back and forth. And there's others say it's indispensable. You know, you really can't give you a definitive answer whether it's worth the extra money, Howie, to purchase a radio that has that that added addition to it. You know, that like say only on more or less the higher end. Radios. But all right, let's turn it over to the net. I'm sure we're going to get a lot of opinions on this. Go ahead, anybody who'd like to make a comment on what do you think of a band scope, over. Nobody has an opinion on whether or not you should buy a radio with a band scope. Rich, I thought for sure you'd jump on this right away. Go ahead. Okay, I lost Rich, but I think he would be, as they say, the maven on this. N2EO, this is KTKY, still with us?
Yeah, Mel, I just stepped away from the rig. I was listening. You might want to look into the ICOM 756. That, the 7-1-Pro 3 now, that has an active scope. The Omni 7, like that has a scope, but it takes a snapshot of the band every time you push a button. I would say probably for what he's looking for price-wise, the 756 Pro 3, that has a good active scope.
Hey, Rich, am I not correct in saying that Yaesu now has on their line, I think I saw it in QS. Let me remember now, what was it, 900, 950? I don't keep up with them, it's almost impossible. I know they got the FT2000 series. My friend bought that, and I know he's got that DMU, that data management unit, that you hook a computer monitor to, and you get all that digital display, including the band. Am I correct on that, Rich? Over.
I think so. I'm really not familiar with the Yaesu stuff, though. I don't want to comment. I believe the DMU, that they call the DMU, gives you a band scope. But I was turned off by that unit. It looks sort of like an expensive gadget that really doesn't do much. So I don't know. I'm really not familiar with it.
Okay. I know I saw it in QSP. That's why I just grabbed QSP. And it says here, for instance, on an... Oh, here it is. FT950, that's a fairly new radio. HF, 50 megahertz, 100 watt transceiver. I don't know what its current price is, but it says here that this optional DMU 2000 provides you with the same capabilities as the FTDX 9000, FT2000 band scope. audio scope, XY SOSO, world clock, rotator control, status, station logging, capabilities, oh, a whole bunch of things. So this is, I guess, a market, an aftermarket device that Yaesu came out with that will go on to, I assume, all their newer radios to add that feature of a band scope. The radio that Rich just mentioned, the 756 Pro 3, I believe there's another one, that's the 746 Icon. Does that have a band scope also on it, Rich? Over.
I'm not sure about the 746. I know the 756 has a very nice band scope, but I'm not sure of the 46.
K2TGW, yes it does.
Okay, K2GGW, right? It does. All right, thank you. I always find somebody to give an answer. K2GGW, can you give us your name, please?
It's Kilo 2 Tango Golf Whiskey. The name is Len.
Oh, Tango Golf Whiskey. Oh, okay, Len. Now I got it. Yeah, I always spoke before. Okay, so you said the 746. Am I correct, Len, in saying that the 746 has a band scope like the one that Rich mentioned, the 756 Pro 3? Are they very similar? Over.
No, I've never seen a 756, but it does have a band scope. You can turn it on or off as you wish. The name is Les, Lima Echo Sierra.
Okay, now wait a minute. Let me get this straight. The 746 has a band scope that you can turn on and off. Is that correct?
It's a 746 Pro, and yes, it does have a band scope that you can turn on and off.
Okay, now this band scope that's on the 746, is it the same as the 756 Pro 3, I believe you said it is. Is that the same band scope? Because I believe there's a big difference in price of the instruments. Over.
Can't tell you. I've never seen a 756 Pro. I just know what the 746 has, so I can't tell you. Pure ignorance.
Okay. Well, you and I joined the club. I don't know, really. I should say I can't keep up with these. I just ran through. Rich, the 756 Pro 3, you seem to be familiar with it. Does that have a full-time band scope also? Over.
Yes, it does, Mel. It has a full-time band scope. I'm not sure if the 746 has the same. I think the 746 doesn't have what they call an active matrix LCD display. I mean, I haven't seen the 746, but I believe, and I could be wrong, that the band scope is not quite as good as the one on the 756. I could be wrong about that.
Okay, now you mentioned also the Omni. The Omni, I think you're familiar with the Omni Tentex equipment. Am I correct, Rich?
Yeah, the Omni 7 has a band scope, but like the gentleman said, you have to push a button, and it does want to sweep of the band. It's not a full-time band scope.
Okay, so that's the story on band scope. Okay. I'm very enlightened on band scopes right now. The only ones I can say I'm familiar with is more or less the homebrew version, which I find it handy. I've always had a number of these spectrum analyzers and pan adapter type devices going way back, because basically it came out, it was introduced in World War II, to the pan adapter system. And so I've had surplus ones, and later on homebrew versions, and I find it has its handy use, because I like to, like I say, sometimes just leave it set on a portion of band and scan 25 approximately kilohertz either side of where the receiver is sitting. So I can open it up, but usually it's for me to spot a station down in the DX window of the of the CW portion of the band. Okay, Howie, that's the best I think we can do. I hope we can help you a little bit. KC20JO, KEY with the TechNet.
Yes, that was a help. Also, I should explain that where those two names came from were basically two items. First of all, they're all three were U.S. companies. And, you know, I'm not usually that nationalistic. I mean, I drive a car that's made in Japan. Both my cars are different brands, but made in Japan. But I was interested that all three are American companies. And when you look at the Sherwood Engineering Report, they all three have very, very good specs in terms of their selectivity, intermod, and so forth. You can have interference to another channel very close by, very strong. They appear to filter out much better than many of the other radios that go for a somewhat lower price. And, of course, the disappointment was that the but the Vanscope seems so useful, and it just doesn't have one. I'm still wondering what to do. KC2OJO.
KC2OJO. This is KEY. Well, I'll just give you my opinion. I find it indispensable because of the reasons I gave you before, that I have a DMU-type system, a scope with adapters on it, hooked to, in fact, it's hooked to a receiver from the 50s, and it still, you know, adds that extra dimension that, to me, is very handy. So I also have on the scope, it also indicates modulation peak, and SWR. I'm sure that this is most likely standard with these display units that they are now incorporating into these radios. I find these things visually extremely, you know, helpful. So the radios that you mentioned there, like you say, they're all great radios, no doubt. They're, you know, as high as possible the technology can possibly produce today. So I guess, again, it comes down to what your pocketbook can afford. So, you know, if you've got the right resources, take the best that's been reviewed in QSC or whatever magazine, and you'll see that they usually give it a good in-depth, you know, review, and the one that you like. But personal preference, I can't really tell you. I haven't had the use of those. Of any of those radios you just mentioned. I think, Rich, do you have the Pro 3, Rich? What do you think of it, over?
You know, I bounce from radio to radio. I own the Pro 3. It was a pretty good radio. I thought it had a lot of so-called features that were unnecessary that complicated it. But it was a good radio, and I can tell you this much, if he's looking for a radio with a good band scope, it has a good band scope. Everything else on it works well, too.
Hey, Rich, thank you. And I don't think Rich works by cup, NHI. So he gave a great testimonial by cup this time, Howie does. But so far, he's satisfied with it, and he is a man that knows radios, as he said. Had a lot of experience, and usually looks into these things in depth before he purchases. And then if there's anything that I'm sure that is not up to, as they say, par, Rich will definitely been able to, you know, alert you to it. So if he's happy with that Pro 3, I have a feeling that it's a great radio. So that's the story, Howie. You take your pick, you know, and again, it's, you know, you're the one who's got to make the final decision, but I don't think you're going to go wrong with any of those radios. KC2OJO, KC2KEY.
Mel, very, very interesting. Your comments, he comments that you have an old radio that obviously doesn't have a band scope. yet you've added a band scope to that old radio. I heard that it was possible. I don't know what it really takes to possibly add band scope to radios and maybe even to the K3. How did you add a band scope to an older Collins radio? KC2 OJO to K2 KB1.
It's not a complicated problem, really, to tap the IF. You just make a connection to the IF circuit, and basically what it is the time domain is a sweep system that you build another box, and it's got in this other box, it's got the sweep circuit, it's got a mixer, number of filters, and then the output of that is an interface. I think they've no doubt reviewed or showed similar homebrew projects in the magazines at USC and over the years CQ, and I know I've had those projects more or less show how to make a device like that. In fact, EastKit years ago, I remember now, EastKit put out a couple of those. Rich, I believe you in fact mentioned one that you had. Was it for Kenwood or Yaesu that you mentioned that you had that pan type device, optional pan device hooked up to one of your radios? Am I correct, Rich? Over.
Nope, I don't have a pan device, but I was going to say EastKit used to make one called an SB620. SB620 was an outboard device. Most of these were outboard. They didn't, build into the receivers until the last few years. It was an outboard. You would tap the first IF and feed it to the pan adapter, like an SB620.
Okay. Did you once mention you had a scope? Remember you said the CRT was the best on it, that it was. Was that just a regular oscilloscope, or was it also one of these pan adapter type devices? Over.
Oh, that's a regular monitor scope, Mel, not a pan adapter.
Okay, now do they have a pan adapter optional device to hook to that scope also? Over.
Yeah, it's a Kenwood. They made two. They made a BS5 and a BS8. Pan adapter, a module, but that was strictly for the Kenwood radios. You would buy a BS5 or a BS8 depending which IF frequency you needed. I guess if he's got a radio that's similar to the Kenwood IF, he can use it or modify it, but probably the best thing to do is look around on eBay or whatever for an SB620. The only thing you'll want to do is make sure to get it with all the coils, because when you built the SB620, depending on what IF you were going to set it for, you would put in a different coil and use an alternate set of instructions. It would cover from 455 kHz up to 6 MHz, but you had to use the right coil and capacitor assembly. Unfortunately, what a lot of people did once they put in the coil for their radio, they threw away the other coils, so that's a problem.
Yeah, Roger. Sure, if they had no use of it, most likely misplaced the extra coils and everything, that they'll never get much use out of them. I guess it wouldn't be a very difficult to homebrew a coil, to wind a coil, today with the availability of toroidals. I assume the originals most likely were wound on a regular coil force, so today to, make up a coil using a toroid type of core would be easily to replace that. But, yeah, I know I could say there was a number of these different pan-type devices to add on to any receiver. Basically, that was the bottom line, Howie. These were units that not for specific, like the EastKit was not for a specific EastKit receiver. It could be used on many different receivers. As Rich just said, you just put in the appropriate front-end coil. and that matched your IF, and you added this feature. The nice part of it, what I did like about all those, the one I'm using, it's a real-time scope. Now, what I'm talking about real-time, now you have all these solid-state type of displays, these virtual type displays. I don't care for a lot of the new equipment that uses that. I'm from the old-timers, and I like a regular telescope display. So this, we're talking about old-fashioned CRT picture tube displays, Holly. And KC2OJO, KC2OJO, why was the tech net?
That sounds very good. As a matter of fact, I don't recall what the IF is, but the Electrograph station does have a connector on the back that is its first IF output, and I imagine that's before all of the filters they have on it. So I guess if you do see that in a separate box that's set up to sweep that particular IF frequency in its own VCO, in a mixer, I guess you could probably see that through the scope, or maybe the box that you mentioned, that was mentioned, something that would be able to couple directly to it, could very well be. Thanks a lot. KC2OJO, over.
Most of the older, in fact, many of the old transceivers even had a jacked output, as you say, from the IF and all that was for a transverter. And so you could either add on transverters, you could add on different things like this TAN system that Ken would use. There was a number of them that, you know, had different options connected in the back. Number of the old transceivers, you can look at them, loaded with a bunch of RCA and CIN, didn't plug in the back and all kinds of things, or, you know, adding on these aftermarket or homebrew tech, different types of devices. So, and I can tell you, they are very easy to do, so you can easily add that extra dimension to your shack that a lot of people do find, you know, helpful. Okay, thank you very much for your question, Holly. Very interesting, always to delve into these different options. Anybody else would like to join us with a question? This is K2KEY with the TechNet.
W2PNJ, this is yours. What's new at Dayton?
Okay, W2PNJ. I think I should know your handle. Sorry, I don't know offhand. What is it? First, start out with your name, please.
This is Bob. I'm sorry. It's Whiskey 2, Papa, November, Juliet. The handle is Bob. Good evening, everyone on the net.
Okay, Bob, W2PNJ. Thank you for joining us. What's new in Dayton? I don't know. I wasn't aware that... is it the Dayton weekend, Bob? Over.
Yes, it was, and I'm just curious if anyone was at Dayton, if they had anything new to tell us.
Okay, well, I'll check in, and anyone that's on frequency, did you take a trip to Dayton, anyone? Please let us know what you saw. Over. Boy, none of us have wound up at Dayton. Wow. All of the group here, Brooklyn and Queens, and the five boroughs of New York and Long Island and everything. Nobody went to Dayton that we know that can give us a little bit of a insight into the, you know, the people that, what they brought, what they've seen, or whatever. Come on, somebody could say something about Dayton. Maybe the gasoline cost of gasoline and traveling this year has discouraged a lot of people from making that trek to Dayton. Well, okay. Well, Bob, I'm sorry. I don't know of anyone offhand, at least in our group, that made the trip to Dayton. Well, let me ask you, one fellow on frequency that's a member of our club here at CGOT, Howard. Anybody do you know that went to Dayton? Over.
Hey, Mel, CGOT here. My friend Tony in 304 reserved a room. I spoke to him today, and he was still in PA, so he apparently he didn't go. I don't think anyone I know went there to buy. A friend of mine in the computer industry actually went out there to sell, and I have yet to speak to him. I might speak to him tomorrow when I'm at work. Actually, just reading an article here. It's in the Sunday Times about newer cleaning, burning diesels that are coming out. I mentioned it this morning on the Assembly Net. Back to you, NTGOC.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Of course, the gasoline, we're going to see a lot of innovative things coming up now that will no doubt attract the attention of people that do a heck of a lot of driving today. Some of my friends do commute by car from Brooklyn to Jersey, it's starting to really dig into their pocketbook now. So they're also contemplating, you know, looking into cars, I guess, with alternate, you know, systems, these electric cars, hybrid electric, you know, gasoline type cars and all. And diesel, as you mentioned. I'm sure that we're going to have to see some major changes in the next few years because it looks like there's going to be no ceiling on the cost of a gallon of gasoline. I see now that the sky is really the limit. So it's either going to create a situation in this country, a major situation, you know, for people financially, is going to cause a problem with a lot of businesses because everything is moved by truck. So there's got to be some way that we can mitigate the constant rise of the fuel oil, and because you know it's getting to everybody. It just even go to the supermarket of late, you see how the prices of every item in the supermarket has gone up considerably, Howard, over.
Yeah, okay, Mel. Yeah, I know what you're saying. Not good. And been on the uptick for quite some time. But it, of course, it's gone up quite a bit over the last few months. We can attribute that to many things. One of them, of course, is the weakening U.S. dollar. But there's a lot of other variables involved, too. It's not one thing that we could look at. Unfortunately, we haven't improved our infrastructure in this country for looking elsewhere for energy. And we haven't built a new refinery in about 3 decades or more. So it's an interesting article. It's in the auto section of the Sunday Times, if anybody has paper in front of them or online. I'm actually looking to get something else, and I think the good thing right nowadays, I'm only driving my car a couple of days a week now. I'll probably use public transportation and walk more. Back to you now, and to GOT.
I thought I'd never say that taking the train, public transportation, would be my best mode of getting around. But I found now that it's gotten to that point where also I do a heck of a lot, cut the driving since I retired, of course, considerably. But just personally now, a heck of a lot less driving because the situation of the cost overhead of just things like gasoline, parking, toll, you name it. So I find public transportation now, especially going into the city, is the answer to my current situation. Yeah, I'll read the New York Times, and in fact, that's a bonus of taking public transportation. The train tomorrow will be that I get to read the New York Times, the Sunday Times. Otherwise, I guess it would be a little bit of a problem for me to take time for it, because it would get involved with other things that have priority.